Sure. Melnick in the afternoon, TSN 690 with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Last night in Pittsburgh.
Hainsey over for the Penguins. Hainsey bottled up. Forsberg to the puck. After the nice play by Auberg. Here's Subban with a shot. He scores! From the top of the right circle, the Predators strike first.
We're going to have a challenge, by the way.
After video review, it was determined that the play was offside, therefore no goal.
Played behind the net by Ekholm. Crosby knocks Ekholm to the ice. Crosby keeps the puck alive. Out to the right point, Daly. 20 seconds to go on the Nashville penalties. Daly for Malkin. Fires. Score! Evgeny Malkin fires one off Pekarinen and in. A power play goal. Penguins take a 1-0 lead.
The Predators got stuck on that icing call, as Joe mentioned, but they had their third defense pair, Irwin and Weber, on the ice. Crosby's line came out, and as Joe mentioned, they never left the ice until the puck was in the net.
So there you have it, as heard right here on TSN 690. Those three distinguished voices, the entire Stanley Cup final right here on this radio station. Kenny Albert, Joe Micheletti, and Ray Ferraro in Pittsburgh. How are you?
I am doing good. I am actually going to a ball game tonight.
I heard Rod. Yeah, you've never been?
No, not been here, and I hear nothing but great things about the ballpark and looking forward to it.
Go ahead, Gallo.
I've been to a dozen stadiums, Ray, and Pittsburgh is my favorite that I've been to.
Have you been to Fenway?
I have been to Fenway.
Have you been to Wrigley?
Nope. Wrigley is on my bucket list big time.
So how come you put Pittsburgh ahead of Fenway? Just curious.
It's very different to compare the two.
You went to Fenway. You went with Connor.
That's true. I did go with Connor. No, we had a great time, and I loved Fenway. It's different, though. Like, you appreciate Fenway for all the history.
Yeah.
But as far as, 2015 at the time or 2017 now.
Yeah, the facilities are a little ancient. Yeah.
Yeah.
They are ancient at Fenway, but I'm looking forward to this because I've never run into anybody who has said, it's okay. I always hear that everybody just loves the ballpark. And so we're going to go over tonight, and looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, that's why I left my seat, because, it's one thing to see it and to have that energy and that vibe and to sit in the seats and go, okay, I've been spoiled through my life as a season ticket holder. But this is a gem here in Pittsburgh. I did not expect it to be as nice as it was. And so that's why I got up and I explored. I explored the ballpark from every angle. Yeah. You're in for a treat tonight.
I hope the game's decent anyway. So, I don't want to come out of there and go, the game sucked, but the ballpark was nice.
Yeah, I hope you get some sort of bizarre vibe left over from that hockey game last night. Is that the most bizarre Stanley Cup final game you've ever seen?
I've never seen anything Stanley Cup final or otherwise that looked at all like that. I mean, I can't even think of four or five times that the Penguins had the opportunity to shoot, when they passed up a shot, like not more than four or five times in those 37 minutes. And to not have a shot for literally 90 minutes and then somehow win, that must feel like a great escape. It was the oddest game. And actually, the 37 minutes without a shot, it's probably longer than that, because they got a shot or Bonino's goal, but that wasn't a shot. I mean, he was it hit the defenseman and went in. Otherwise, it was going out to the slot. It was Pittsburgh wasn't very good. Nashville was really good. Pittsburgh didn't deserve to win, but they did win. And I guess at the end of day one of the Stanley Cup, that's all that really matters.
I know Crosby was trying to convince everybody after the game that we missed the net a lot. Well, the fact is that even though they won almost 60% of the faceoffs, they didn't have the puck. They never had the puck.
Now, I should know this, but I didn't check it out. They had, 12 shots on goal? There's no way they had 30 attempts last night. I mean, maybe they did. You guys can take, if you get a chance, take a quick peek at that. But they didn't miss the net a lot. They missed the net a few times. Like, the game was never in Rene's end. He didn't have anything to do. There was one chance I remember, start of the second, I believe, where Matt Cullen missed a good chance up over the top of the net. That's really the only one I think of when I think of them missing the net.
They were
outplayed, they were outskated, they were outworked, and they still won. And so if I'm Nashville, I would say that would be my most concerning thought of the whole day was we did just about everything right, and we got nothing for it.
And Ray, and we'll get to that shot total in a second. You know, one of the things we talked about all year was what was developing with the offside reviews, right? And the last thing you want is to have this emerge in the Stanley Cup final. And almost on cue, less than an hour after Gary Bettman saying it's working out exactly as we had hoped, there's the kind of nefarious rule being applied to wipe out the goal by PK Subban.
I hate this rule. I don't dislike it. I hate it. And here's why I hate it. It'll take me 3 or 4 points, but this is why I hate it. They've taken one of the most simple, straightforward rules in the game, the offside rule, and it was pretty black and white. You know, the puck had to precede you over the blue line. You had to have 1 foot outside of the blue line, and that's the determination onside or offside. Now they've added all this gray area. Do you have control of the puck? Because if you do, you could back in over the blue line. If the puck is bouncing, but you sort of get control of it, and your foot's still outside, now you're on the line. Now it's okay. And if not, if it's off by an inch, we're going to check it on video review. So now they check it. If the linesmen, who are really outstanding at what they do, if they can't decide this in 30 seconds, of looking at the three angles they get, if they can't decide that in 30 seconds, that means, to me, it's not clear enough to change. You can look at that play last night 35 times, and you will sometimes think it's okay, sometimes not think it's okay. I looked at it, and during the game, I was sure it was going to be a goal. And here's the last point. They say they want to get this right. That's why they review. We want to get the calls right. Okay, so my team has a 3-on-2 on your team. They blow it dead for offside at the blue line. We look at it on review, and, well, you can't review it, but we look at it on a replay on TV, and really it wasn't offside. So they got the call wrong, but there's no recourse. So what this rule means is we want to get the rule right some of the time, maybe. It is a ridiculous rule, and for Gary Bettman to come out and say this is working perfectly, I don't even know how he said that without laughing at himself, because it's absurd. The rule and the application of it is absurd. This was not what was intended to happen. There's no chance. You know what? The Titanic, it sailed perfectly till it hit the iceberg. I'm glad there was a disallowed goal. I hope there's another one. Because the only way that the general managers will look at this rule and say, that something has to be done is if it happens again. Because it doesn't improve the game. It doesn't improve the quality of the game. It doesn't improve the flow of the game. I can't think of anything it does except take away a goal from a sport that's starved for entertainment value. As great as the playoffs are, that rule last night overshadows most of everything of what happened.
We hear the commentary, well, it was just offsides by a little bit. His skate was in the air. The fact of the matter is, it's our job to make sure the rules are complied with, and the video replay through the coach's challenge on offsides has worked exactly as we hoped it would. The rule's the rule, and we enforce it.
For those who may have missed those comments, there it was, Gary Bettman, and you know what happened.
Well, I got one more point to that, Mitch, if you don't mind.
Sure.
If it's the rule is the rule, then call a cross check, call a hook, call a slash, which doesn't get called in the playoffs. That's why I say they want to get it right some of the time, maybe a few parts of the time. They're not calling the rule book. Come on. I mean, like, I know they don't think we're all really dumb or naive or gullible, but I'm not sure what they think, because the rules don't get called, yet this one, was Philip Forsberg's foot an inch off the ice? I don't know. I couldn't tell, but I guess that's what they decided. And that can't stand, but five cross checks in front of the net can stand. That's okay. That's just battling for the position. No, it's not. It's cross check.
Ray Ferraro on site just ahead of chilling out at the Pirates Arizona Diamondbacks visiting the stadium for the first time on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690 along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. Rod?
Hey there, Ray. So over the last few years, I've tried to pin you down on what it felt like for you to play when you were full of confidence and when you were in the zone. And you've done an admirable job to a skeptic trying to explain that time slows down and you feel like the next goal is going to go in, the next shot's going to go in. And I get that without really getting it because you were there and I wasn't. But like the game last night and the playoffs have been so weird when it comes to the flow and multi-goal comebacks and strange calls. Like, are you ever really in the zone when the game can seemingly change so incredibly over just a few seconds?
Well, you think you are, and that means you are. You know, I mean, like, the answer is no, really. You're never really in control of anything when you're on the ice. You're in control of what you attempt to do, but the other guys aren't going to let you do it that easily. I remember sitting on the panel with John Tortorella, and the game was 4-0 we were watching. And I said, how come you guys never relax behind the bench? I mean, look at this. It's 4-0. He said, you never relax because you never know. Well, somebody scored, then they got a power play goal, and then a puck bounced in off a defender, and it was 4-3, like within 5 minutes. He goes, that's why you never relax. And so I've always kept that in my head that, you know, you can feel in control of the game. I mean, after the first period, what could Pittsburgh not have felt in control of? Even though they didn't carry the play to a dominating first period, they had a 3-goal lead. And then they give up a power play goal, and then one bounces in off of Sissons, and then they get outworked on a goal, and it's like three distinct separate plays, but all of a sudden the game's tied. And they haven't had a shot in 37 minutes. So I think you believe you have confidence. I think you feel, like I remember just feeling a certain way, like a frustration that nothing is going right. You come back to the bench, you slam the door, you take a drink of water, you go, man, I suck tonight. Like you can't get it. Nothing went well in that previous 45 seconds. So you regroup, you go out, and you had another shift like that. Well, when you feel confident, when you feel like good things are happening for you, even if it's just kind of a good thing, it's in your head that good things are happening for you, you have a bad shift, you go back, you close the door. You have a drink of water, you put the water bottle down. You go out for your next shift, and you have a good shift. Like that to me is what, if I can maybe make another example, that's kind of what confidence can be versus frustration. And I saw a lot of frustration from Pittsburgh last night because some nights you just don't have it, and they didn't have it, and they couldn't get it back, and yet somehow they won.
Ray, that second goal that Pittsburgh scored, it really looked like Mike Sullivan was trying to time it so eventually he could get either the Crosby line or the Malkin line out there against the third defensive pairing of the Predators. Finally, he gets the Crosby line out against Weber and Irwin, and those two guys on the blue line for Nashville, they both played under 10 minutes. Do you think they could afford to play their last pair under 10 minutes in all the games in this series?
I do, because that's what they've done. I mean, it's really interesting. Nashville plays their top four guys between 24 and 26 minutes a night. That's what their average is through the playoffs. Pittsburgh plays their guys, their six guys, between 19 and 22 minutes. But they play six. They play a group of six because they don't really have a standout. Nashville's got those four guys that are on the ice all the time. What ended up happening, twice it happened in the first period. Once Nashville got away with it, they put out, it was a neutral zone faceoff. They put out Weber and Irwin, and then Sullivan put out the Crosby line. On the play went back to Pittsburgh's end. They came up the ice. They went offside. There was a commercial. They changed. This time there was an icing call with those guys on the ice, and the puck comes back. It's the worst scenario for them, but it doesn't mean they're going to score all the time. But in that case, they never got out of the zone. They couldn't even readjust. Crosby's line starts forecheck, and then Crosby makes a terrific play out to Kunitz, and then it's over to Sherry in the net. And they're going to have to play those guys sometime. They're NHL guys. It's not like they can't play, but there are limitations to what you can handle in a matchup. And, you know, Crosby and Malkin are probably too much for those two guys. And the home team was able to exploit it last night. They're not going to play more. That's they've gotten this far, and that's how they've played.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ray, actually, if anything, they'll play even less. Roman Josi was, this is like 28 minutes last night. They've got some extra days off the way that this series is scheduled. Yep. We may even see them play less here. This is it. It's the end of the year. They're kind of used to it.
They won the first series, and they got 5 days off against Chicago. They won the second series. They got 4 days off. They won the third series. They got 6 days off. So in the playoffs, they've probably had more days off than if this was a regular season.
Right.
Like they had 15 days off between the series, plus the days off in between what have they played, 12? They won 12 games, they've lost six. So in the 18 games they've played. So they got to have at least 9 or 10 days off there. So since the beginning of April, or the middle of April, they've had 25 days off, which is kind of crazy.
Just before we let you go to the ballpark, Brian McClellan, general manager of the Capitals, took a while, but he finally met with members of the media in Washington. And as you probably know by now, the big red circle is his comments about Alexander Ovechkin. We're not going to strip him. He's got to change the way he plays, et cetera. He's a big part of our franchise, big part of our history. He's a big part of where we're at as an organization. Just to casually say, let's trade him? For what? For who? I don't think it makes sense from an organizational point of view. Maybe at some point, if there's a legitimate hockey deal that became available, but I don't know if that's where we're at right now. I just think he's got a history here. He's a big part of the franchise, and he'll continue to be going forward. What do you make of that?
Well, lots of people say a lot of times that, oh, you got to make a big deal. You got to trade this player. Well, the realistic look at it is, well, where are you going to trade him? Who's taking that contract on with the cap hit that he has? And the answer is, there's not much that can be done. So perhaps down the road, when the dollars make a little more sense to an acquiring team, maybe they could do that. But as if you look at Ovechkin and look at him for his limitations and for his strengths, you're going to have to get by the cap hit. But goals don't just show up; they're tough to get. And so I can build a case that Ovechkin doesn't need to be your top player or even your top two or three player, but you need to have him on the ice in a situation where he can do some damage. And absolutely, he's an asset to the Capitals. 100% he is. I'm not surprised that it's not on the front burner to move him. I think that's as much a realism as anything else.
All right, I got to ask you, since you were there, did you see any flying catfish?
I just saw when it hit the ice.
I don't know about legend. It was just a dumb redneck with a bad idea, but it's turned into all this.
Have you slept?
I have slept an hour and a half. We drove through the night from Pittsburgh back to Nashville this morning.
Okay, now I hesitate to give this guy publicity, but we are all wondering the same thing, how you smuggle a dead catfish into the arena across the country. His name is Jacob Waddell.
I wanted to take a Nashville catfish because it's more original to throw one of our catfish on the ice. So I went to a local fish market, bought a catfish that was entirely too big to hide and throw on the ice, which created a whole problem in itself. But yeah, I drove it up there, drove my wife and my family up there, had it in a cooler, sprayed it down with cologne, put it in a cooler full of cologne and body spray.
What kind
spray,
of cologne? Do you remember?
Old Spice and some other Fiji or something like, something like that.
Wonderful aroma.
Yeah, just a dirty,
a musky scent.
Rotten fish crotch.
Do you want me to keep going here, or you've heard enough?
Oh, I'm entertained.
All right, here we go.
I wanted to take a Nashville catfish. Underwear on. I had regular underwear on, put compression shorts on, slid that between the two, and walked right in.
Did anyone around you suspect something?
Absolutely nobody around me. And the test run was, I was at home, my in-law's house, and I had it on me, and they were there, and my wife and kids were there, and I talked to them for 20 minutes, and they had no idea I had the fish on me.
Wait, there's one more here.
So the cops wrote you a ticket.
He did not write me a ticket there. This is the funny part, and I'm going to blast them on air if I can for just a sec.
Sure.
The cop told me.
We welcome that on this show.
To my face, you are being charged with disorderly conduct. You will get a ticket, a citation in the mail. You can come back up here and dispute it. You can pay it. That's what you're being charged with. That's the only thing I was told.
All right, so there you have the catfish guy, Jacob Waddell.
You know what? The fact that he strapped the fish on to go to the in-laws and have a chat.
That's something you think about all the time, isn't it?
Like, I got to have a dry run of this?
Yeah, there's a part that's left out of there, actually.
There's some, I don't know if the wires are all touching there, but absolute A for ingenuity and effort. Execution, you got to give them an A. Entire thought process, I can't go higher than a C on this one.
Enjoy the ball game tonight.
We will. Awesome. See you guys.
Jacob Waddell.
I don't know about legend. It was just a dumb redneck with a bad idea, but it's turned into all this.
There is an element of that story that we didn't cover, right? Well, didn't he drive over the fish to kill it?
Yes.
With his truck.
Yes, that's also true.
Yeah, that's...